Back on this Football Thursday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Vic Carucci with you. And we continue talking with members of a panel discussion that was held over at First Energy Stadium today. The Cleveland Browns panel discussion, Lessons from the Past, Overcoming Challenges of Racial Barriers in Recognition of Black History Month. And two more of the panelists joining us on this show, John Wooten and Paul Wiggin. John, I know you were part of this panel a year ago. And it has to be rewarding always to be able to talk with the young folks, the high school students who were there today, to hear some of the important messages you had to deliver.
Well, the real thing here, Vic, is the fact that it is tough being a young person today. And the more you can give them in the sense of values and things that you know they're going to have to encounter as they grow older and so forth, and be able to give them exacting information as to how they got to prepare when this happens, that is rewarding to me, you know. And this is why we applaud the Browns and the school, Cleveland Public Schools, I almost said Dallas Independent Schools, the Cleveland Public Schools for doing this, because I know that the way these kids tweet and Facebook and all that today, they will pass it on, and that's what you're really shooting for.
Paul, you weren't part of this a year ago, but to have you here was incredible because you brought a whole different perspective to the panel discussion and recognizing a lot of the barriers that have been met by players dealt with as teammates, and you saw it from a whole different perspective and going back right to your background growing up in rural America in California.
Yeah, it was interesting to me today, and I just want to go along with John and say how impressed I was today with the fact that the Cleveland Browns, for one, as my favorite organization in many ways, had this kind of a program, and they thought about the importance of all of this. And I want to say that to start the thing off.
Absolutely.
From my background, I had a little different look at things. I kind of came into a situation not with any kind of feelings related to race. We were a little bit of a melting pot in California, as you can imagine. But I think I was very fortunate to be with a team like the Cleveland Browns. And I don't know if there were any other teams like us or not, but the camaraderie and the fact that I think when you're on a team, you don't realize race even exists. Everybody is who he is and what he stands for. But I really am thankful that I had the chance to play with guys like John Wooten or Jim Brown or Paul Warfield, Walter Beach, many of those guys that were just not only great players but bright people and you learn from them. They were great people to be around. So to be here today, especially with John, because he's the one teammate that was on there with me back in those days, and it was a privilege for me to be part of this. And I wasn't as excited about this coming in. You know, getting here, I just thought this will be a thing to do, and we'll do it. And, you know, when I got here and I saw the magnitude of it and what it stood for, I would love for this to happen 32 other places or 31 other places, mm-hmm, other than Cleveland, mm-hmm, in the league, mm-hmm, because I think there is a way, even though we aren't instantly recognizable to these young kids, once they know who we are and what we stand for, I think we have a message that I think can make a difference in their lives.
One big point you made today, Paul, that really stuck out is you said everybody should have the opportunity, if you're an athlete or you're on a sports team, to play on a team that is mixed race, and that was very valuable for you. Why did you feel that that was such an important message?
Well, I use an example. When I walked off the field in 1964, I was with John and everybody, I was thinking about the feeling that I had inside, this special feeling. And you know, probably on that day, you felt like you were a world champion. You felt like the world, you could do anything you wanted to. It was such a great feeling. And when you got in the locker room and you were hugging guys, we saw guys from Mississippi hugging guys from California, Syracuse University, right, or wherever. To me, that's a picture in my mind that I will never forget, because it represented not only camaraderie, but we were all kind of robbing the same train, if you know, sure, what I'm saying.
John, you mentioned something right at the outset that I thought was, it's a simple message but a powerful one. Always better to give than receive, and you wanted these young people to understand that. But tell me again what your thinking was in sharing that.
Well, the thing that you want, again, to get across to people is how much and how important it is to be a part of giving someone something to helping them on their way. I mean, all of us, you know, everybody that has achieved in this world, in this country or wherever, somebody has helped them along the way to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the job you do here, somebody's helped you. I'm here, somebody's helped me. The whole thing of giving back and moving forward, pay it forward, however words you want to use, it doesn't matter about the words. The fact is the action, you know, and that is so rewarding. You know, I mean, a guy called me the other day, Rick Oslin, as you know.
I know him from Dallas, yep.
And he asked me, I was going into the College Hall of Fame here after 55 years of since I played college ball.
Yeah.
And he was asking me about the story, and he says, what is the most important sports thing that you have ever in your life, the joy? And I look back, and I said to him, Super Bowl 41. And the reason why Super Bowl 41 was, for the first time, two African-American coaches opposed each other, Tony Dungy and Lovie Smith.
Yep.
Tony was already in the league coaching. But under the Fritz Pollard Alliance, we were able to go and help Lovie get that job at Chicago. Mm-hmm. We were directly involved in it in terms of the interview process and helping prepare him for the interview. And he ended up getting the job and goes on to coach. You know, one of the biggest sporting events in our country is the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And here we had two African-American head coaches. As a matter of fact, the other thing that they did to show the quality and of what kind of people they are, for the first time in the history of the Super Bowl on Friday, they both stood with the Lombardi Trophy. Now, I don't even know if the Jim Harbaugh guys stood together with the trophy this past year.
Right.
You know, here they last week and take the picture on Friday.
Right.
They did it. And what it really showed was that they were saying, hey, we both want this Lombardi Trophy, but it isn't that important that we are not willing to stand in. Which you're really saying you don't care who which one of us get it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because there's always like that superstition or whatever it is that coaches try to avoid. But that's such a great point. And it was symbolic of something bigger. Right. And since you bring that up and your involvement with the Fritz Pollard Alliance, relative to this last go-around of coaching openings that occurred, Lovie Smith was one of the coaching casualties. And of the coaches that were hired, none was African American. Is there, how much of a concern is there with that? And do you see some adjustments now with the Rooney rule and so forth that might help remedy this?
Right. We sit with the commissioner and Ambassador Rooney and Jeff Passion and the staff last Thursday down at the Super Bowl
in New Orleans.
And we went over with them a new plan of action of extending the Rooney rule down not only into coaching but in front office. And we came with a plan of whether each team is developing young white or black, you know, each team put in two guys, so to speak, into their pool of working guys from their own staff. That is the proposal that we are presented to them, and we're going to follow up with that.
Okay.
The group there last Thursday was very receptive to it. We now are probably going to go to the March meeting with the owners because this is where that has to come from.
John Wooten and Paul Wiggin joining us, two former Browns greats who were part of a panel discussion today at First Energy Stadium, Lessons from the Past, Overcoming Challenges of Racial Barriers. I want to switch gears a little bit, Paul, and talk about the current Browns and, you know, so much change, again, coaching staff and so forth, ownership right on down. I know you keep tabs throughout the league on different teams, but you follow this one as well. Just your thoughts on where you see the Browns headed with the new direction here.
Well, for some reason, all through my life, because I had such a positive experience with the Browns, I always think the best for them. So I'm always maybe sometimes overrating what they do and so forth, or at least overrating their hopes. But I know the new ownership, and I think you start with the ownership. I think, and I'm not speaking for the past ownership, but I think when you start at the top, I think. If the top is doing the right things and things are going in the right direction, coming off of that, as you come downhill to the head coach, come down to the assistant coaches, and on down to the team and the energy in the building and all of the things that go with that, I think you develop. You start, maybe you have to start from scratch. And I understand that the Browns, I don't follow them that closely, but they're young. Mm-hmm. They got some good young players. And so they're on their way. They're going to take a step or two. But I see the Browns coming back, because there's a foundation for the Browns is incredible. You know, I think back, I played 11 years with the Cleveland Browns, just a part of the football team, but they had 11 years that I played, they had winning seasons.
Right.
And, you know, again, I was fortunate enough to play with the John Mootons and the Jim Browns and some of those guys, but still, you know, that's what the Browns were about in those days, and I think they're about to be that again. There's too much tradition in the Browns for them not to be a great organization, and I think the owner bought it. I think I read in the paper his comments when he bought it. He has a lot of respect, and particularly for the tradition of the Browns that
sure.
that he believes. And I met him. I met him at the Legends weekend when okay. we were here honoring Ernie Green, and I was very impressed with him. I'm going to start at the top because I don't know much beyond that.
Sure.
But I'm going to start at the top and say they're really heading into a back to what the Browns, I think that they're worthy of being, and I think that's heading in the playoff championship level.
Jimmy Haslam, the owner, and a very dynamic person, and he's brought in more dynamic people with him to lead this organization, John. And you know, having been here, what this team means to this community and what, again, ultimately returning to glory, to success, what it would do for this town.
I don't think there's anybody that pulls for the Browns more than I do. I and I met with Jim Haslam when he was here, and Joe Banner and I were together at Philadelphia.
Right.
When Jeff Lurie bought that
That's
ball
right.
club and so forth. And as a matter of fact, one of the sports writers called, and he made mention of the fact that they still don't have a football guy. And I said, well, if you mean that Joe Banner didn't play football or pro football, that's true. But I've been in meetings with Joe there in Philadelphia. I know his ability to evaluate talent, and that's what is key, not only talent to put on the field, but talent to help run the organization.
Right.
You're going to see a very inclusive, and I think that the staff that they're putting together here with Jasinski, and who was here before, as you know,
right.
but Ray Horton and those
North
guys,
Turner,
I think it's going to be really, really a big factor, and it's going to take a little while.
Sure.
But the great thing is, other than your second, you got some pretty good draft choices. You must have, 10, 11 draft picks, I think.
There's several. And yeah, like you said, and Josh Gordon, who
right.
was given up in the supplemental pick, looks like he'll be a good one. Too.
Yeah, but we had seen him at Baylor there
right.
when he was at Baylor, but you know, it's just a matter of being able to get the right guy at the quarterback spot.
Sure,
that's key. You know, you it's a quarterback league. Paul Brown told me that in 1959.
That's still
if you
true.
Can't protect him, you're not going to play here. You know, so
yeah.
we know that's a quarterback league, and consequently, you got to get that guy.
Right.
Now, I don't know whether Whedon is that guy, or do you go after Alex Smith out of San Francisco, who we know is that guy, or you go into the draft and, you know, Geno Smith at West
yeah.
Virginia and Landry and Bartley. Even though these guys didn't have the banner years that we thought they were going to have
right.
here in 2012 at their positions at the quarterback spot, those guys got some talent. And you know, and
a lot of intrigue, a lot
yeah,
of intrigue.
It's
with
going
all
to
of
be
it.
Interesting. It's going to be interesting.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. John Wooten, Paul Wigan, two former Browns greats joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up for you on ESPN 850 WKNR.